Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 1:57 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 10th. Now, I thought I would kick off and just look at the fact that we have a sea of green on the majority of futures in here today. A couple of points that are, I think, really jumping out. The first is that Ethereum is up over $100. The Dow Jones Industrials is up 448. And then copper had a strong day, nickel had a strong day. And then we also had a reasonably sized bounce by the pound, by the euro. And also that initially today, the 10-year yield got down to 2.66% and finished in positive territory. Now that was all. And then we also had a stronger performance by crude oil, up $1.34, natural gas up 41 cents, but it was Dutch gas that really made headlines, up 12. So that's another new high. So we've seen some significant up and down action in commodities recently. And today we had the figure for CPI coming out in the USA, and it was better than expected. So now it's only in excess of 8% on a month-over-month basis. Of course, year-over-year basis. And unchanged on a month-over-month basis. But the big question then is, how much of those were core factors and which were non-core factors? So let's just think about some of those non-core factors. Because people were really worried about lumber prices last year when they were exploding on the upside. And then they had a round trip and came all the way back down, then rallied again at the beginning of this year, and now they're all the way back down. But now we have an upward dynamic today, and this is a limit move. So it's more than likely a low of at least near-term significance. Now let's think about wheat. It's a major foodstuff for much of the world. And wheat prices surged with the Russian invasion of Ukraine and then came straight back down again. Now we're still at elevated levels. These are not the depressed levels that we had back between 2015 and 19, but they have certainly contracted significantly, so that when we start to look at the year-over-year comparisons, well, comparing 1400 cents in January of this year to 600 cents in January of last year isn't quite the same thing as comparing 800 today with probably more like 700 in the middle of last year. So those core factors on a year-over-year basis are obviously starting to contract because of the volatility in commodity pricing. And the simple fact is that the cure for high prices is high prices. Now, then let's think about the most economically important of these commodities, crude oil. So the price was in positive territory today, and it reversed an earlier decline. So here's the almost chicken and egg scenario that we have for oil prices. When there's sentiment around the fact that we're going to get tighter monetary policy, therefore demand will deteriorate, then prices fall. We had one more positive CPI figure. So now investors are starting to think that perhaps we're towards a pivot point in terms of monetary policy, therefore demand will recover. So prices are more positive. Now, of course, it's going to have to sustain a move up and through $100 in order to really confirm that this is more than just short-term steadying. And a lot is going to hinge on what happens with the dollar. So the dollar index got down below 105 in here today and is in the process of rebounding. And this remains a consistent uptrend. It will need to follow through on the downside and then subsequently break a midpoint danger line, which would be to fall through the middle of the underlying range. If it does that, then we can very clearly state that this is no longer a consistent trend and that the dollar's outperformance is over. Now, there's the potential that the euro could do better next year. It's estimated at least that the pace of ECB interest rate hikes will accelerate next year and perhaps go even faster than the Federal Reserve. And it's a possibility that that might happen, but the euro wasn't in any shape to hold on to its initial gain in here today. The pound was up over a cent, and the Bank of England has been more adroit in raising interest rates than the ECB. So it is now steadying from the 120 area. And in the short term, and by that I mean the last 2 months, we have an inverse head and shoulders pattern. So if we can follow through on the upside, this might look like more than just a simple short-term bounce. It could at least revert back up towards the mean, and we're at an area of potential support. We have at least short-term evidence that support has been found, so it's not unlikely that we could have at least a rebound back to test the trend mean, even if the UK is going to have a recession. But I do think that it's important to highlight with the UK that because the Bank of England has got fewer tools to tackle inflation because of the predominance of interest rate or floating rate mortgages in the UK, that the Bank of England has to be much more aggressive in how they're talking the market down. And I think so far it's been working. But that doesn't mean that the UK necessarily has to have a deep, or it doesn't have to have a deeper contraction than anywhere else, even if the central bank is talking that way. Simply that central bank doesn't really have much of a choice. So yesterday I showed quite a number of charts which showed the correlation between stock market indices testing their respective trend means and bond yields also testing their respective trend means. So with less impetus on inflation, then stocks were in positive territory today. The FTSE 250 was up about 385 points, and it's right now testing the sequence of lower rally highs. The NASDAQ 100 had a similar performance, so it was up about 300 points, and it's also testing the sequence of lower rally highs. Now, it has pushed back above the 13,000 level, and that's pushing up into the overhead trading range. So the downtrend isn't as consistent as it used to be, but we still have the potential here for a further rally. And then the bigger question is going to be about interest rates and the outlook for inflation. Because we've looked at some of the non-core, but it's important to highlight that wage growth continues to march higher. And it's still only at 6.7%, and inflation is running in excess of 8%. So this is getting to the heart of why people think there is a recession already underway. Because they feel like it, that they see that inflation is eating into their living standards, even though they've experienced wage growth. So people feel like there's a recession. Now, that kind of sentiment is damaging to economic activity because it really has an impact on the appetite for making purchases. But this is a very strong core figure, and there's an almost lockstep relationship between wages and rents. So rental prices have also continued to rise. So the only thing that's not still pushing higher on that core are used cars. So the used cars index has peaked. but it's not coming down in an aggressive manner either. So when we think about the inflation measure, the Federal Reserve uses the core measure, and they're very clear in stating that they don't like paying attention to the volatility of commodities because they tend to go up and down a lot and they muddy the waters in terms of the outlook for inflation. But the market, on the other hand, is looking at the CPI figure and thinking that we must be close to a peak. And money supply growth is now negative. So there's a causal relationship between CPI and the growth of money. So it peaked in February of last year, and it's now contracted really quite significantly. So we've been falling aggressively. Now, on a month-over-month basis, I think we are in negative territory. Not quite on the annual basis just yet. And CPI and M2, when you overlay one over the other with an 18-month lag, they tend to look rather similar. So we would have to be prepared for the potential that inflation is going to come down. And that's the raw figure. But then we should also consider why inflation will come down. What is it that is going to really mitigate some of those core factors like wage demand growth, rent, and used cars? Well, it could be an exceptionally benign outcome, or it could be rather deleterious to the economy. So we could have a deep recession, and that would result in a rise in unemployment. And that would very clearly have an impact on wage demand growth. And it would also help to enhance productivity, because productivity has been really disappointing over the course of the last year. So, and falling productivity against higher wages in nominal terms really means that companies really are getting less for paying more. And that's not sustainable. So we're certainly in an environment where there will be measures taken to try and improve productivity and reduce headcount. And that also suggests that the job openings figures have peaked and that we're going to see more demand for labor-saving devices, and particularly robotics and software. When we think about the robotics sector, well, it tends to be rather capital-intensive, and then did spectacularly well in 2020, but did not pull back nearly as much as the wider market. And the global robotics ETF has bounced rather impressively over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks. So it's now in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but bouncing from the underlying range. And it's one of about half the market that has completely unwound the move and firming from where the price was ahead of the pandemic. Then I thought the IEA's report on the 4th, I think, talking about the need for a 10-fold increase in mining supply to meet the demands of the renewable energy sector. Well, this is the figure that miners have been absolutely salivating about. But where are these mines going to be built? It's exceptionally difficult to get a mine permissioned today. And the reams of regulation that need to be met and the environmental regulations that need to be complied with, the relationships with indigenous populations, and then the threat, particularly in less well-governed countries, of indigenous miners basically jumping the claims. These are all really significant challenges. And how are we going to get to 10 times output when all of these challenges exist? So new mines getting built are going to be at a premium. And this is against a background where commodity prices have been exceptionally volatile. So some new mines will succeed in getting built. It's exceptionally unlikely that the tenfold increase is realizable. What that basically means is that the plans for electrification and decarbonization are unlikely to be realized. It's going to take a lot longer than anyone is willing to give the benefit of the doubt to. So, one thing that we will see, and I think it's largely inevitable, is that as prices for copper and nickel and zinc remain high, different chemistries will evolve. So ESS technology develops iron sulfide or iron phosphate batteries, and the share came through with an IPO via SPAC in October and then collapsed, but it's beginning to turn around, and it's providing the kinds of batteries that utilities will be buying. And I think that that is more likely than not to be a successful business model, that we're going to see a menagerie of different kinds of battery technology with the most cost-effective winning out over time, and those that are more energy dense and lighter going into transportation, those that are less energy dense but heavier going into utility scale storage. And we'll have multiple additional ways of doing that. Then there is also the nationalism, I guess, angle on the mining sector. So Lithium Americas is trying to build a mine in Nevada, and they're expecting a court decision today, and it's an appeal on the original mining license. So they may get the green light to go ahead and build the mine. And if they do, well, then the chances are that the US government will probably pay for most of it. But that'll be on the understanding that they go through a demerger. So one of the idiosyncrasies of the renewable energy sector is that China was the country that invested the most in most of these companies, and it was the seed investor for Lithium Americas. And the Olaroz project in Latin America is being developed with Guangfeng, I think, lithium. So Lithium Americas is going to have to demerge from that company, and they'll have to do that before they can take funding from the US government. And that'll be on the understanding that they will only sell US produced lithium to US companies. So there is this sort of nationalistic tendency arising that, and probably the only way that some of these developments are in fact going to go ahead. Basically means that resource nationalism is probably the best chance that most of these companies have of actually getting the mines built. And if they can, well, then they're going to be in a really preferential position. But it basically comes down to the fact that they need overt government support, and that's the only way to get a mine built these days. So then thinking about that and trying to grow the number of mines active in the world by 10 times in the space of 8 years, really is pie in the sky. But those that do succeed really will command a premium because it is just so difficult. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.